This is our second for the year. Our next one will be, I believe, in either August or September. And our last one will be in November. Basically, what we're doing as we go through our Digging Deeper series is we're looking at great and then not so great builders of the Bible. And so basically what we're ending up doing is we're doing some character studies as we go along and seeing what made these people and in these different areas and different walks of life, what made them good builders or not so great builders. And how we can emulate those things and become more like them or less like them in certain cases, so that we can mold ourselves to the will of God. Today, this morning, we're going to be talking about a man that built something that saved mankind. As you study through your Bible, you will only find two men that ever built something that was meant for the salvation of mankind. Who are they? Noah was one. Who was the other? Christ. The church. He built the church. Okay, so you have two men in the history of all mankind that built something that was meant for the salvation of man. And this morning, we talked about, if you remember, our last Digging Deeper Sunday, Rick talked about Christ. So this morning, who are we going to be talking about? Who's the other one? It's Noah. So let's talk about Noah this morning and what made him this ark builder, what made him such a great builder. And as we think about Noah, you know, any builder, what does he have to have before he begins to build? He's got to have plans. Okay? If a man begins to build without plans, what ends up happening with his building? It's probably not ever going to get finished. If it does get finished, what's it going to look like? It's going to look like a mess, isn't it? Because we didn't follow a pattern. Okay? You talk to anybody that builds anything. From the smallest microchip that goes into a computer, to the largest skyscraper, in the world. What do they have when they begin to build? They got a plan. They've got a blueprint. They've got something, a pattern, that they follow. This idea, that is given to them. And so they draw out these plans and then they begin to build. Now, friends, those plans upon which a man builds, it makes him either a great builder or a not so great builder. Okay, there's not many things in which there is an in-between. The builder, as we're talking about this morning, is Noah. So what we want to do as we study Noah, this ark builder this morning, this great ark builder, what we want to do is answer some questions. The first question I want us to answer is, number one, why Noah? Why Noah? Why not someone else? Number two, what made Noah such a great builder? And number three, what can you and I learn from this great builder in Noah? Number one, why Noah? Why Noah? Why do you think God chose Noah? All right, he was a good man. All right, I want you to think about this for a moment. I haven't gone back and done the math to see exactly how long the earth had been here when God called the flood upon them, but it'd been here a while, okay? Over 1,000 years. These people began to populate the earth. As a matter of fact, people that are much smarter than me have gone back and estimates say that the earth's population at the time of the flood was around 2 billion people. Think about that for a minute. 2 billion folks. That's a lot of people, isn't it? And out of all of them, God chose Noah. But why Noah? He was a good man. What else do we know about Noah? He was righteous. Found grace in the eyes of the Lord. What exactly does that mean? What is grace? Alright. Grace, the definition that is most often used is what? Unmerited favor. Okay? Unmerited favor. All right, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. He was given something that he didn't necessarily deserve. He was given the privilege, the opportunity, not only that, but now the obligation, when God called upon him, to build the ark. Now he found this grace out of between two and four billion people. God chose him. Now we would think that out of 2 billion folks, we choose the low side there, out of 2 billion folks, somebody else, God could have chosen any number of people in our mind. You know, we might think along those lines. But friends, this gives us an example. This gives us some insight into how evil, how wicked the world had become at this point. But before we go any further, let's just read chapter 6. It's 22 verses. And let's look and see what it is that God is seeing as he looks down upon the earth and the human population at this time. Genesis chapter 6. Let's read this together. And it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair. And they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh. Yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, and some became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Room shalt thou make in the ark, and shalt pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it up. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. A window shalt thou make into the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above. And the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third story shalt thou make it. And behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. But with these will I establish my covenant. And thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee, and every living thing of flesh, all two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. Of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing of the earth after his kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, Thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Verse 22, Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. So as we read chapter 6, and we see what it is that God is seeing as he looks upon the earth and its population, what was it about this man, about Noah, that made him stand out? When you look at Noah's life and how he's described here in these few short verses in which Noah is actually described, his life stood out from those of the 2 other billion people that were upon the earth. He stood out. You look and you see this man and how he's described. He was perfect in his generation, verse 9. He was a just man, verse 9. He walked with God, verse 9. Does this man need any other description? Wouldn't you like to be described as Noah is described here? A just man, When compared to his generation, he stood out head and shoulders above anyone else. Because why? Look at the end of the verse. What did he do? He walked with God. He walked with God. Where do you suppose Noah learned that in this wicked, wicked world? I mean, and that's where we're getting it. I mean, Noah had to have learned about God from somewhere, right? Had to have learned it from somewhere. And if he's going to be a just man, and he's going to be perfect in his generation, and he's going to be described as a man that walked with God, I would think that he had to have learned it from someone else. And as we think about it, Noah's father would have still been alive at this time. But we're not told much about him other than he sired Noah. Okay? I would think, as Brian has pointed out there, I would think he probably sat at the feet of his great-great-grandfather and learned a great deal about the type of man he ought to be and about the God of heaven and walking after him. And so it is then that he found grace. As a man, he needed that grace. He found grace in the eyes of God. In the midst of this great wickedness, one man, Noah, stands out from the crowd. And then we were told there in chapter 6 and verse 8, but Noah, as he is just described in verse 7, what he's going to do. In verse 6, God is grieved at his very core and his very heart that he's even made man. You think about it, if you go back to Genesis chapters 1 and 2, and as God progresses through the creation, his conclusion at the end of day 1 is it is good. At the end of day 2, it is good. At the end of day 3, it is good. At the end of day 4, it is good. At the end of day 5, it is good. At the end of day 6, in the crown of his creation and man, he says it is very good. Now here's something that is very good, and now God says, I'm sorry that I even did it. I'm sorry that I even created this monstrosity, as he's probably looking at it now, 2 billion people that are killing each other. The earth is filled with violence, remember? Verse 11. They're killing one another. My creation is killing itself. I'm sorry I even did it. But as he looks out, who does he see? Noah. And he says, here's a man that I can go forward with. Here's a man upon whom I can rebuild, that I can start over with. And so he found grace, verse 8, in the eyes of the Lord. Friends, when we look at the world about us today, and what we see around us is wickedness continuing. I lived in Memphis for 2 years. It's not a place I ever want to reside again, I'll tell you that much. But there was not ever a night or a day that you look at the headlines in the paper the next day that there wasn't a murder somewhere in Memphis. Somebody had been killed that night. And it's like that in cities, not just in Tennessee or Texas. I imagine it's the same way in Dallas or any major metropolitan area. Somebody loses their life that they didn't die of natural causes. Okay? We look at the world today, not just here in the United States, but all over. what do we see? See, the world is filled with violence. I just read, what was the major headline yesterday? President Putin from Russia went ahead and invaded, and I can't remember where, Ukraine. He went into the Ukraine. He wasn't invited to come in there. This is a forceful takeover that he's gone in on this peninsula, the Kremlin, or whatever the peninsula is called there in the Ukraine, and he's gone in, and we're staring, they're staring war in the face at this point with Russia. You see, in the Middle East, it's continual violence. We have a glimpse, friends, of what I'm getting at here, as to what Noah is seeing in his day. World was filled with violence. And God goes so far as to say that their imaginations were evil continually. They were laying down at night wondering what other evil things they could do. Well, what have we not done yet, in other words? And so God looks at Noah and he says, I'm going to start over with you. I'm going to destroy the face of the earth. I'm going to take everything away. And we're starting over. So friends, I want you to think about this as well. As we go forward, we think about Noah. How different do you think he must have seemed to everyone else around him? How different do you think Noah was than all of his peers? Look, as I began really to study this, that's something that hit me pretty hard. Noah, in the midst of this generation, wickedness all around him, violence all around him, people are trying to think of new ways to do evil, and then here's Noah. He's a just man. He's not trying to cheat anybody. He's trying to live his life according to God's plan. He's perfect in his generations, friends, and what that tells us there is that he was mature. He was a man that wanted to do God's will, and it says that he walked with God. That was, friends, think about it now. That was not said of anybody else during his time. This is a description only of Noah. After Enoch was taken, that couldn't be said of anybody else. But it's being said about Noah. How different was he than all of his peers, all the folks around him? If we lived during that time, friends, what I'm getting at here is we would have been able to know that man was different. He wasn't like everybody else. Manner of speaking, he let his light shine, didn't he? Now, there have been those, as we read through the Old Testament, there have been those that felt like they were the only faithful servant of God left. You remember Elijah in 2 Kings 19? I've been living in a cave, and he's thinking, you know, I'm it. I'm the only one left in the northern kingdom that is following God. What was God's response to Elijah? Don't be so full of yourself, right? I've got a bunch of other folks over here that have never bowed the knee to Baal. He gave Elijah a reminder, but here when we look at Noah, who stood with Noah? There's nobody else. Now his sons and their wives were upon the ark, but I don't. You know, as I studied this and I looked at them, after they get off the ark, I really don't, especially one of the young, I really don't know how well they followed God. But it was God's plan that they'd be up on the ark. Noah was it. Noah stood out from everyone else. Your point. But. When it speaks of Noah in verse 9, that he was a just man, that word is overwhelmingly in other places translated righteous. Okay, so he was a just man. In other words, he was a righteous man. He was perfect in his generations, meaning he was undefiled, he was upright, he was blameless. He walked with God. Again, go back to Genesis 5 and verse 22, and it speaks there of Enoch. Walking with God, very similar language, walking with God and following His Word. He was a true worshiper of God. He called upon God. Genesis 4 and verse 26 speaks of the men then beginning to call upon God. So what made, as we see now why God chose Noah, what made Noah such a great builder? What made him the right man other than these other things, what made him the right man to build this ark? As we talked about a moment ago, before someone begins to build, what does he need to have? Plan, right? Plan. Now, suppose that God had told Noah, I'm going to bring this flood upon the earth and I expect you to survive it. And that was it. What hope does man have? If Noah had been left to his own devices, I've got to figure out how to survive this flood. It's going to be so bad that God is destroying every man that's walking upon the face of the earth, all the beasts of the field, all the fowls of the air. If all the fowls of the air are going to perish, what does that tell me about this flood? It's going to be big. There's not going to be any place or any food left for them to eat. Okay? They're not going to be able to land to rest, and so when their wings tire out, what's going to happen? They're going to fall into the water, they're going to drown. That was the purpose of the flood, to start over. When God sent the flood upon the earth, what did He do? He hit the reset button. He's starting over. He hit reset. Okay? And so, this is the whole, now if he had left Noah to his own devices, Noah, you survive. I'm expecting you to survive. Then everything's going to die. Noah needed something. God needed to provide it for him. He needed a plan. Man built a boat in the early part of the 1900s and said that God Himself could not sink it. Now, I don't know that God had anything to do with the placement of that iceberg. But I know that was a very arrogant statement to make. Friends, let me put it like this. That iceberg would have been nothing compared to the flood or the deluge that came upon this earth. And nothing that Noah would have been able to conceive of in his mind on his own would have been able to survive it. We think of the flood as it simply raining cats and dogs for 40 days and 40 nights. Friends, it was a whole lot more than that. Because when we read about the flood in chapter 7, what we read about there is not only the windows of heaven opening up, and it was more than raining cats and dogs. It was like a waterfall pouring from heaven. And it did that for 40 days and 40 nights. But not just that, friends. What we have here is water falling from above and water rising from beneath. Now, what kind of seas do you think that made for? You ever, anybody ever seen the movie The Perfect Storm? Russ Eves, wasn't it? That pales in comparison to what the flood would have been like. I'm not even going to try to guess as to how high the wave must have been. But the ark was, the plan was made for Noah in such a way that if he followed it, just as God told him to follow, that the ark could actually literally lay over at a 90 degree angle and still come back upright. Either way. Do you know of a ship today that can do that? That can lift 90 degrees either way and still manage to come back upright? They've been able to test it. Obviously on a smaller scale, and in a contained environment, and given these rough waters, and every time it comes back up. You think about Noah didn't have the technology that we've got today. He didn't have power saw. He didn't have tape measure and all of these things. He didn't have the nails like what we've, he had nails, but obviously they're not going to be like what we've got today and such. And man, I can't imagine. It took him so long. I can't imagine the toil that he must have gone through to build this thing. But what made it work was that it was given to him by God. God demands, he's instructed to build the ark, Noah is, and he demands certain things. He demands a precise material. Gopher wood, verse 14. How many of you have ever seen a gopher tree? I don't know that I have. That may have been called something different back then, but what we do know is that God told him a specific type of wood. What if Noah had used pine or cedar? What would happen? Wouldn't have worked. Never would have floated, would it? Never would have gotten off the ground. And so he's told to use a specific type of wood. So God obviously knows something about this wood. Maybe it floats better than anything else. Maybe it's more watertight than anything else that Noah could have used. I don't know. I don't know what the properties of gopher wood was, but obviously it was the best type of wood to build the ark, or else God wouldn't have told him to use it. Okay? So a precise material is given. He demands precise dimensions. 300 cubits by 50 cubits by 30 cubits. Now, anyone want to take a guess or a venture? Maybe you know. What's the length of a cubit? 18 inches. You talk to someone else, and it's a little bit different, but generally it's about 18 inches. Okay? But he's given, now obviously, Noah would have known the precise measurement. All right, while we're not completely sure what a cubit is today, it was precise to Noah. He would have known what it is. So if it's 18 inches, we can come out with however many feet by however many feet by however many feet. And so, We get an idea of how large this ark is, how big it is. Now, some want to say, the ark just could not have held to, at least two of every animal and seven of every clean animal. It just wouldn't have held that many animals. What do you think about that? Okay. All right, he could shrink them. All right. I would contend that probably what happened is, well, for one thing, let's think about this. Look at verse 20. Someone read verse 20. Genesis chapter 6.
Okay.
key word in verse 20. Key word. Starts with a K. Kind. Right after their kind. I'm sorry? Okay. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about, but these kinds of animals. All right, now think about this. How many different breeds of dog do you see today? There's too many to count, isn't it? As a matter of fact, there's just about every time you look, there's a new breed every year. Okay, that they've bred this animal for a certain purpose or whatever. This one can fit in your purse. This one can do something, you know, it's something different every year. But friends, when you look at this, it doesn't tell us that Noah brought a St. Bernard, a Chihuahua, a wolf, a coyote, a German Shepherd, a Pomeranian. He didn't do that. How many dogs did he have on the ark? He had two. A male and a female. Okay? A male and a female. Right? Think about that for a moment. Out of those two that were on the ark, you have all the breeds that you've got today. Okay? How many different kinds of horses are there, Brian? Too many to count, right? Same thing. How many horses did he have on the ark? Yeah, male and a female. Right? And out of those, you have all the different breeds that you've got today. Okay? That's the idea. See, so there, you didn't have all these different breeds, but you had those kinds of animals. You had horses, you had dogs, and that was it. You didn't have those different breeds. They were just dogs. They were just horses. Okay? So that's how it would have worked at that point. Well, what about the dinosaurs? Somebody said. How big were these things? Where do you ever read in Genesis chapter 6 that they were adults when they went on the ark? As far as the animals are concerned. Would they have had to have been adults? No. And so, and how much would an adult eat as compared to a young one? Alright, so you begin to look a little bit here at a little bit of this logically. And maybe the ark wasn't as full as we thought it might have been. Right. And again, after their kind. I'm sorry? No. That's a sermon for a different day, but you know, there's a difference in macro and micro evolution. Okay? But there's a difference. I want to talk about that. Go back to the dogs and the different breeds. That's micro evolution. They were breeded for certain purposes. All right? What was a dachshund bred for? He went after varmints in a hole. That's why he's long and looks like a hot dog. He goes down in the hole and he chases out the varmint so that you can chew it. That was why he was bred. That's micro evolution. Okay? Try to get a German Shepherd to do that same thing. See what I'm saying? They had a different purpose. Now, no. Right. It really does. Now, precise material, precise dimensions had to be so large. At least one pair of every creature was to be brought into the ark. Alright? And I want you to think about that. Noah, I can only imagine the thoughts and the questions that are running through Noah's mind. How is this going to happen? You know, I don't know that God shared with him all the details of what was going to happen during the flood. But what did Noah do? Verse 22, what's it say? Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. so did he. Sounds like a good epithet for our tombstone, doesn't it? Good point. Neither did these people during this day, did they? Only Noah. That's what the Bible says.
Yeah.
That they shall, verse 20, end of verse 22, of every sort shall come unto thee. And so they came to him, absolutely. All right. He obeyed according to all that God commanded him. He no doubt. Now you think about, he already stands out like a sore thumb in this generation, doesn't he? And now here Noah is preaching for 120 years. It's going to rain. God is bringing a flood of water upon. Friends, they had never seen a flood. They didn't know what a flood was. How did the earth receive moisture at this time? From a mist that came up from the ground. Okay, that's how they received moisture. That's how the earth received moisture. They didn't know what a flood was. Right? A lot of water in the ground. They had no idea what a flood was. And here's this crazy old man saying, God is going to bring a flood of waters upon the earth. Noah, what's a flood? What is that? Have you ever made up a word? Think about that for a moment. Have you ever made up a word? I'm sure we have at times, but we never had any that got into a dictionary. Noah had to make up words. Noah had to explain what this was. He didn't know what it was. He was simply repeating what God had told him. But here he was. Regardless of how he might have looked, he's going to face ridicule. He's going to be taunted. He's going to be scorned. If they had asylums back in the day, they would have thrown Noah in it and thrown the key away. And yet he continued to preach righteousness, to tell them that this flood was coming. You think about this for a moment. 120 years. You have that commission to warn the people of this earth that judgment is coming. How would you determine success? What does that number mean? What does it mean? Doesn't mean anything. If Noah measured his success by the number of people he saved, he was an utter failure. He was a complete, total, and utter failure. If he measured himself by the number of people that he saved. Eight souls. Eight souls were upon the ark when the floods came upon the world. Eight. And he preached for 120 years. How do we measure success? Was Noah successful? Was Noah successful? Absolutely he was. He was a just man. He was perfect in his generations. And he walked with God. Friends, I am successful if I can be described as God described Noah there. Okay? Absolutely. Do we need to be concerned with evangelism? Absolutely. Was Noah concerned with evangelism? Yes, he was. But friends, the simple point of the matter is you can preach to 100 people. You can show 100 different people the gospel. You can show 100 different people the truth. And you may only convert one. What is your success rate according to the world? 1%. You've got and the world says you're a failure. What does God say about that? Huh? He looks at that as a priceless soul that has come to the knowledge of the truth. You are successful because you did what God told you to do. That's why Noah was successful. He built the ark according to God's plan. That's what made him such a great builder. He was given one blueprint for the ark. He was not given liberty to fashion the ark to his standard. He was told to fashion it exactly how God told him to. Now friends, God wants his pattern to be followed, not improved. Man is so obsessed today with improving upon God's pattern. Has anybody ever been able to do that? You can't improve upon what is already perfect. If God designed it, there's nothing to improve upon. And that's what we need to understand ourselves and get others to understand. Now, very quickly, I know we've already gone back to ring the bell, so let's think about some things. What can I learn from Noah? Number one, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, right? So here's a question for us. How do I find grace in the eyes of the Lord? I need to do as Noah did. I need to obey, exactly, I need to be obedient. I need to obey God's Word. We must live a life of righteousness, Titus 2, 11 and 12. If I'm going to find grace in the eyes of the Lord, I must be blameless, Philippians 2 and verse 15. If I'm going to find grace in the eyes of the Lord, I've got to walk with God, Malachi 6 and verse 8. We must stand out from the world that is around us, Romans 12, 1 and 2, a verse that we should all be familiar with. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind. If we're going to find grace in the eyes of the Lord, that's what we've got to do. And friends, I want us to understand and remember God's emphasis on pattern and design. And we see it in His church today. The ark was a type of the Lord's church. Where was safety found during the time of the flood? You better be in the ark. There was no safety found outside of it. And so safety, God placed safety where? In the ark. Where does God place safety today? That's how He designed it, isn't it? That's how He designed it. It's in the church. Jesus said the kingdom would come with power, Mark 9 and verse 1. We see that happening in Acts chapter 2. The apostles were given the keys to open that kingdom, Matthew 16 and verse 19. The worship is designed by God. There can be no improvement upon that. Directed by His pattern, John 4 and verse 24. And God adds those who follow that pattern to His church, Acts 2 and verse 47. Romans 1, 16 and verse, and chapter 16, or chapter 6 and verse 17 as well. God has an emphasis upon His pattern. And friends, as we go through today, you're going to see that that's a recurring theme. God's pattern and the following of it. Questions or comments?